Welcome back or welcome to the Single Track Podcast. I'm your host, Finn Melanson, and these are our final three Javelina 100 pre-race athlete interviews with Brett Hornig, Heather Jackson, and a virtual roundtable of Joe McConaughey, Blake Slattengren, and Ryan Raff. Stay tuned for a full race preview episode with Leah Yingling and that same Brett Hornig that I just mentioned, dropping very soon. But before diving in, thank you so much to NAAQ for sponsoring this show. NAAQ, spelled N-A-A-K, has a special deal for Single Track listeners where you can head over to their website and use the code SINGLETRACK15. The Single Track portion is in all caps at checkout to get 15% off your next order. And if you're looking for recommendations in the process, the three products that I have been enjoying the most lately are their salted soup drink mix, the watermelon drink mix, and their sweet potato purees. They've also just got a really helpful website in general. They've got a section that's dedicated to ultra runner recipes. They've got hydration nutritional guides. They've got race day nutritional guides and recovery-based nutritional guides. And there's just a bunch more there. So if you're curious, head over to NAAQ.com and go check them out. Brett Hornig, it's great to have you here on the Single Track Podcast. Normally you're my co-host on many different versions of the show, but in this episode, we're actually talking about a race you have coming up, the Javelina 100. We'll go through a lot of stuff, but any initial thoughts? Like, what are you feeling right now?
I'm feeling good. Yeah, I mean, the crew, the Pacers, it's really all coming together. You know, I feel like kind of last minute, but that's how it happened last year at Javelina. It went really well. So perhaps there's something to not actually worrying about the planning part until like 2 weeks before the race, but training's been going well. I'm healthy. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Correct me if I got any of this wrong, but fourth place last year in about 13:45. In my opinion, subjectively, you solidified yourself as more than just a fast media guy. You also narrowly missed a golden ticket, I think by one spot. Like, you and I were wondering all the way into late spring if Dakota or John were going to change things up and it'd roll back to you. What brings you back this year?
I didn't think anything would bring me back this year. I mean, immediately after the race last year, you were there. I was like, dude, I'm never having a race that good ever again. I'm retiring. I'm just going out on top, and on top, fourth place at Javelina. That's my on top. And like, I pretty much still firmly thought that until like September. My running had been pretty good. I mean, we've been cranking out a ton of miles just because we've been reviewing so many shoes. And I think as a result, the base fitness for this year is actually kind of better than I thought. And then getting in a whole bunch of mountain stuff this summer kind of contributed to that overall fitness. And then I was initially going to do the 100K and do some media stuff. I was thinking do the 100K and then commentate the last lap of the race. And then I started kind of trying to seriously train for it a little more. And then a lot of my workouts and just long runs, like, were indicating it might actually be more worthwhile to give it a go in the 100. So then I kind of started thinking about that a little more. And I'd had this conversation with a couple of my athletes that I coach where it was like, if you run the race that's perhaps shorter or a little bit less pressure, and you have the race of your life, will there be any regrets that you didn't do like the marquee event? Sometimes that answer is yes, sometimes that's no. And in my case, I think if I had like really knocked the 100K out of the park, all I would be thinking is like, damn, what would that have been in the 100 mile? So I'm kind of to a point now where I don't want to miss that opportunity. So I'm going to forego the microphones for one more race and try and, you know, do all 5 laps.
Well, I know for a fact you'll be sorely missed on the content / live stream side of things, but it is exciting that you're taking a swing here. And if we if we go back in time just a little bit, one thing I'd love to hear you talk about is just like when you first got into ultra trail running, which I think was around like 2014 or 2015, you had told me at one point that you thought it'd be kind of cool if like you did see this thing through and you got the best out of yourself and maybe it put you in a position to be some sort of like pro athlete in the sport. And I think when you look at last year's race at Javelina and sort of like the momentum off that, do you think that that race could be a springboard for like realizing that dream?
I think it, yes. But I think the springboard also like sprung me into a different direction that wasn't necessarily go all in on, you know, like find a sponsor, have them support you and do my running. It kind of almost opened up a lot of doors to, in a way, like sponsor myself for some of these races, like through the coaching, through the conversational pace shoe reviews, through single track, and just kind of the work that like we've done within the industry. It's opened up a lot of opportunities that's definitely made me busier on the work side of things outside of running. But I feel like I learned so much this year when I wasn't running. I mean, like we got to go and see Western States in a very unique way that most people don't get to. And same with Hard Rock. You know, we watched UTMB like the whole time. I feel like I learned so much this year from some of the top people in the sport that, you know, I don't think I would have ever gotten able to learn those things. Like I got to interview Courtney DeWalter twice this year. Like I got to ask her like questions about her running. I got to see her run. Those things that I learned then made me be like, dang, I kind of want to try that. I kind of want to try it myself. So it was a huge motivator. And I don't know if I would have gotten those things had like, say I just put the blinders on and just started doing my own running, because that might have not kept the mind open in a way to try different, whether it's different training kind of philosophies or even just learning that like you're actually capable of more than you think you are. So I don't know if even if this race goes really well, if that would turn into like me pursuing any sort of contracts, it might almost just have me lean more into what I'm doing already.
It's pretty cool because you wear a lot of hats in the sport, right? Like you're a coach at Trails and Tarmac. You're an athlete. You've done a lot of stuff on the media side, single track, conversational pace, Aravipa. I think I'm curious, like what is something that you've learned being in the media, looking at athletes that you then take into your training that you didn't necessarily pick up as a coach or being absorbed in your own training?
I think one of the biggest things, I figured it out a little bit before Javelina last year, was getting even more specific with the training. I've always taken a lot of pride in being a pretty well-rounded athlete, being like I could hop into a 5K or like a marathon as well as like 100 mile, and all of them would go pretty good. But I just, and that's with where like a lot of like current training science, like we're seeing it too, like a lot of the people winning these major races are like, oh, like I leaned even more into the vert and the volume for UTMB. And then when you like combine that with newer fueling science, it's allowing people to more sustainably hit some of these training numbers, and it's not totally trashing themselves. And it's like taking those things that I've gotten to hear firsthand, like, you know, getting to talk to, you know, like Morton's
Josh
nutrition.
Yeah.
Josh's, you know, and like hearing it firsthand and like getting to hear from him, like, oh yeah, this is what Tom's doing for his nutrition. And it's like, he replicates that in his training, and that allows him to hit these bigger volume numbers. So then it's like, okay, what if I try, you know, reducing my intensity and letting go of, say, like the quote unquote fast stuff for a little bit and leaning more into longer 100 mile things. It's kind of opened up new doors from a training standpoint that I didn't think I could do in terms of like, how much can I run in a week?
When you look back at last year's Javelina and you look back at the execution in particular, what were the biggest reasons it went so well in your opinion? What did you nail?
I think the biggest thing that I nailed was I took a massive risk with my training. I ran so much more in like the 6 weeks leading up to the race than I ever had in any six weeks leading up to a race. And that was kind of coming from a mindset of like the only 200s I had done prior to that were Western States. And those aren't really the races where you want to like experiment with training and risk not getting to the start line or risk not finishing. Like the race is so like important, like that you kind of have to respect it in a way that it almost hampers your training. Javelina, I kind of went into the approach of like, I'm just going to train the way that I think I should train for this race if I was coaching someone else, and like taking everything I know about me and like throwing it out the window. Can I do it? And if I get hurt, that's fine. Now I know. But I kind of wanted like this, I saw it as a great opportunity to take that risk, trying something new. And then I learned that I could actually do that and run a little bit more than I thought I could. And I think it really like forced me to focus up on a lot of things. And it was hard. I mean, it took so much out of me in terms of just like the day in, day out grind of like everything you're doing you have to make sure it's for Javelina, like going to bed early and like waking up and getting your runs in and doing your stretching and your mobility and all that stuff and like actually doing it all. But then to see it all result in a race, like 13:45 last year, like I trained like someone who could run 13:45 last year. That's kind of what it ultimately came out to be.
Maybe even putting your coaching hat back on, how would you advise other athletes to pick between the textbook versus the experimental training? Because even with Javelina, I mean, you and I could probably debate this, but Javelina has become a pretty prime time race. So even that's a race where it's like, oof, do I really want to like push the envelope here? Or do I want to sort of like stay conservative? Like, how do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to the importance of that next race. And like, is that next race that you're signed up for, is it worth potentially not starting? Is it worth potentially missing time for? Like, if you get hurt, you get a stress fracture or something, like you're missing months. Are you okay taking that risk just to see if you're able to, if making that jump in training nets a positive stimulus? You know, I think those are just decisions that you really have to make. And I was kind of already to a point where I was like, Javelina 2022, this is the last hurrah. We're going for broke. And like, we're just going to send it and then just be done with running forever. And it worked. And then it was like, sick. I can't believe that actually worked. We can be done racing forever. But now it's taken a whole year to kind of get that fire back again. And I've done some races and they've been super fun, but they've been like smaller races, going out with friends and like still racing them hard, but not, you know, going to the full well in terms of training for them. And I feel like it just has taken a full calendar year to feel like I'm ready to do that again.
Obviously it was a great day, but were there any areas for improvement in your mind, and how did that translate into the last 6 to 8 weeks of training?
I think the one thing that I got lucky with last year is it wasn't that hot. Last year, you know, it was like in the 80s. I'm full well assuming it's going to be in the 90s this year. So I've been training, keeping that in mind. So I've upped the heat training. I feel like I'm more prepared for the heat than I was last year. And last year I was pretty prepared for the heat, but I've added some things. Like I've been doing like warm treadmill runs, you know, over here in the studio, just sitting in my own filth. I think the other big thing is, last year I had like 35 minutes of stoppage time. I think I can knock 20 minutes off of that.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I think I was running so well that I was like, well, I don't want to screw this up. You know, I want to make sure to take my time at the aid stations. And I think for last year, that was the right call. For this year, I think now I know like these are some things. Like last year I changed my socks at the end of lap 3. I don't plan on doing that this year. You know, I took a little bit of time at like most aid stations. I think I can just be a little bit quicker through that. I think our transitions in and out of, you know, the headquarters were pretty quick. I think they can be just a few seconds quicker. And that's just with streamlining some of the things. Don't worry, I've got a whole spreadsheet for you. But from a running standpoint, like last year, I feel like the actual running part, I executed that about as good as I could have on that day. So this year, my goal is to replicate that. Ideally, I'm just a little bit fitter than last year, and I think I might be. We'll find out.
So you've raced Western States twice now. I think we would both agree to nowhere near your potential. I think if you're running 13:45 at Javelina, you should at least be running in the 16s at Western. I guess it's debatable, but I feel like you have many hours to shave off there. If you get the golden ticket, if you have the chance to race Western States, are you definitely committing to it? Or are you going to take the whole, like, I'm going to accept the ticket and we'll see come like April or May?
Dude, I'm going to have to consult with my, dude, Finn, how would you feel if I got a golden ticket and then
I would be so incredibly torn. I think, the selfish person in me would not want you to take it, but obviously I want you to take it.
I think I would take it, but still commit to doing everything leading up to the race. I would still do all the pre-race interviews and the live shows.
I
loved doing that. And like, we would be so much more organized this year, like in terms of just like, we wouldn't have any tech mishaps. I mean, I'm sure we will, but it wouldn't be as bad. I think we could do both.
We could just outsource the editing and the live stream OBS setup stuff.
I think we'd be able to, I think I could juggle both. The only thing I wouldn't be able to do is race day coverage because I would be out there running, but yep. I think that's okay. Especially after what we learned this past year. I think we could do it. I think we could do it without me, for Saturday.
Assuming all that's controlled, you would take it.
Yeah, I would take the ticket. Absolutely. I would love to give Western States another go because like you said, I think I've left so much time on the table out there.
I think you've left like 5 hours.
I know.
At least.
And that might just be partly learning where some of my strengths and weaknesses are within trail running. And even though I've been doing it for almost a decade, like still learning a lot, like I think I need to treat Western States like much more of a mountainous course than I have been, because the limiting factor the last few years had always just been like my legs blowing up. And it's like, dude, I got to freaking train for like UTMB and then go race Western States. I don't think the speed aspect isn't a problem. Hence like Javelina going pretty well. Like if I ran 13:45 at Western States, I'd be pretty stoked.
Last topic we got to cover, and I'm actually genuinely excited to talk about this because you're the right person to talk about it with, and that's just like your gear setup. I remember last year at Javelina, you introduced me to like six new brands, like Never Second, and I think Precision, Delta G, HVMN, like all of these new like exotic brands. We'll talk about Nike in a second, but talk about like nutrition and any, like what are you rolling with nutrition-wise, gear-wise, all that kind of stuff.
So nutrition-wise, I'm still going to be sticking with like Never Second for probably half my calories. And then the other half is going to be my own little like goo soft flasks full of mega condensed Roctane powder. Mm. Like I've learned, like you can dump 5 goos into one of those flasks and you have 5 goos. I can also dump 100 carbohydrates worth of Roctane powder into one of those flasks, and when you mix it with hot water, it all mixes in, and it is so much more liquid than 5 gels. Like I think we're getting scammed out here with syrup. Like it's liquid, it's liquidy, and I'm able to put it down like so much easier. So probably half my calories are just going to be from this super condensed Roctane. And I know there's people that are like, why don't you just drink Roctane? Like I don't want to taste, you know, 30 ounces an hour of Roctane. Like, let me just take my shot of it and then drink some water. So that's going to be the plan. And of course, we'll just pivot if stuff starts to go sideways. But so far with my training, that's what I've been working with, and it's been great. And then ketones, of course, during the race. I need that focus, even though the studies all show that there's no evidence of an increase in power output or endurance economy. I think the ability to think and do public math 60 miles into a race is absolutely a performance benefit. So that's where I'm seeing the ketone use. And, you know, I think naked waistband, you know, I'll hold a bottle and I'll tuck another bottle in. you know, the trusty green ice bandana that's crushed so many races at this point.
And talk about the Nike Project 2, which is exciting because, like, in the Discord, we've been talking about Nike's increasing investment in the sport, and it looks like you're doing some cool activations with them. So what's up there?
Yeah, so, I mean, I feel like we've all kind of noticed it, that, like, Nike Trail has invest a huge amount more time and money resources into trail running this year than perhaps any other year that they've done it. And we worked pretty closely. They started sponsoring the Siskiyou Out and Back trail runs, which is our big trail race here at Ashland. So, like, why is Nike Trail sponsoring that race? Because it's in Oregon. They like the area. They like the community. They just wanted to help support the mountain and the trails here. That was pretty much it. They're like, cause we like it. So getting to work with them on that was really cool. And then they are essentially, they're supporting me for my Javelina journey, going up through this race. So I'll be wearing all Nike clothes for Javelina, and I'm going to help them out with a couple, like, we're going to do a group shakeout run Friday morning, location TBD, but we do that. We might do some sort of, like, happy hour thing as well, but, you know, it's just cool, like, that they're going to be on the ground, you know, just, they're just trying to build that trail stoke again. I mean, one thing that you and I are both very stoked about is the announcement of their newest Nike Trail athlete signing, Anthony Costales.
Yeah.
Anthony, that's awesome. Huge congrats. That's the real Nike Trail pro.
What shoes are you wearing? Can you say?
You'll have to find out. You will have to see. I'm wearing an Ultrafly.
Okay. Is there a number attached to the end of that?
No.
Okay. All right.
That's all I can say. We'll just have to take pictures.
All the more reason to tune into the live stream and even be there on the ground if Protos of the Gram is watching.
It'll be a game day decision, actually. We'll see.
Cool. Awesome. Well, Brett, we're super stoked for you, obviously. Hope you get that ticket. Hope you get another crack at Western. We'll make sure to link to all your social in the show notes. We'll link to Conversational Pace, Trails and Tarmac. And yeah. This is awesome. Can't wait to see it and hopefully do a better job sticking with you on lap 4 in my pacing job this year.
I think you're in better shape this year.
I think so.
I don't think you'll have any issues. Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing is, like, shouts to Finn Melanson, crew chief, pacer for lap 4. We got Caleb Olson crewing, pacing me for lap 5. Like, that's some good juju. And then also crew extraordinaire, probably the most experienced out of all of us, Sarah Osiszewski, the Cocodona champion, is also going to be in my corner.
Wow.
And, like, that's a squad, and that is going to bring a huge amount of motivation to me to run my best race, because I want you guys to be able to enjoy it as well.
We're going to enjoy it no matter what, but we're going to help you get it done. This is going to be super fun. Thanks to Rabbit for sponsoring this show. In celebration of the Javelina 100, Rabbit is offering a special promotion for single track listeners only. Use promo code Javelina20, that's Javelina in all capital letters, and then the number 20 for 20% off your next online order between October 21st and October 29th. Anyone who makes a purchase with this promo code will also receive a special gift with their order. So head over to runandrabbit.com to check out their brand new apparel just in time for the fall. This includes their new High Country flannels, Low Light collection, and more. If you head over to their website before or after those dates, our old code, SINGLETRACK20, still applies. That's a 20% discount code, but you're not going to get the special gift. Heather Jackson, it is great to have you back on the Single Track podcast. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Finn. Yeah, I'm so excited to be here. Great to chat again. And yeah, doing pretty good. I was just telling you offline, I have been kind of nonstop the last 12 hours traveling from Tucson out to Bentonville with a couple of different travel snafus, but good to go now.
It's the fascinating life of a multi-sport athlete. Where does this podcast find you?
Yes, made it to Bentonville, Arkansas last night for, I actually have one last gravel race coming up this weekend ahead of Javelina next weekend. So yeah, nothing like closing out the season with two more back-to-back weekends.
And I do want to talk about that as we get further into the Javelina discussion, because I find that interesting. But, you know, I don't think we've talked to you since Western States, and I figured it'd be fun to sort of do like a retrospective on your first year in the sport. And when you think about it, like, I'm pretty sure it kicked off with last year's Javelina. There's been a lot of success. The golden ticket at Black Canyon comes to mind. There's been some hardship too along the way. But like, when you think about that first year and you think about, you know, here's what I thought it would take to be successful from like a training and racing standpoint versus like the reality. What have been some of the biggest insights for you so far? Like, what's stayed the same? What's changed? What surprised you? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's funny because Javelina will be 1 year, my 1 year anniversary in kind of the trail running community. I was looking back on the calendar last year, just kind of to see the lead in to the next, I guess, week or two. And it's crazy how different it was, just because, yeah, my whole year had been focused on Kona, and I had done, you know, three very intense training months into Kona, and actually Big Sugar Gravel Race and then Javelina were just kind of these bonus fun events I was just literally going to go to. And now I find myself 1 year later, like, totally hooked on both sides, but in a different way. To your question of what's changed, or you know, how are expectations and the whole past year that's gone down. I mean, it's night and day, I think, from the mentality that I had last year. Last year, I was just like, oh, cool, I'm going to go run for a long, long time. And now it's like, whoa, all that I've learned, I guess, specifically speaking to the trail running scene, and just, it's crazy. Like, I think I held on to the triathlon / that is road running, I mean, marathon type training for so long of like, oh yeah, I'm just going to keep the quality over quantity. I'm just going to continue to do the same things, but maybe bring them onto the road. Onto the trails a bit more. And I think there is a good, that is good in some sense, but there's been so much more that I think I need to bring in and that I've learned from the few trail races that I've done this year, in terms of like, just, yeah, spending time on trails, just getting out there and being on the trails. And that's for numerous things. It's for time on feet, extending long runs from my typical 2 to 2.5 hours, like getting out there for longer, getting out on trails and just getting experience, learning where to put your foot versus just kind of the gravel roads I was running. I mean, that's been huge in terms of like the technical side, obviously. I mean, Javelina was my first trail race, and so that's what I knew. And I was like, oh, this is great, I can do this. But lo and behold, Javelina is probably one of the least technical trail runs out there. Hence why I'm returning. But
well, one of the things that I find fascinating is, and when I think of like the two things that plague most trail runners the most often, it's heat management and it's nutrition. And from what I've observed, those have been like the two least issue-based factors for you, right? Like, you've just, from like your background in triathlon, you've kind of nailed those things. You've already like uncovered what works for you in those areas, right?
I appreciate that. Those are, yeah, I could claim those as things that I have, I guess, learned about just through the Ironman racing. I think, yeah, certainly the heat prep. I mean, I had to prep for Kona for 10 years of like, yeah. And that, I have done the heat prep. I've done nutrition, I guess, for that, 8 to 9 hour range, and just dialing in, okay, these are the grams you're getting in per hour. This is the hydration strategy. So certainly I have those, I guess, carried forward from my years of experience in the triathlon realm, but I guess it is that other things that have just been, the learning curve is huge. And it's one of those, like, I mean, I'm still sitting here trying to figure out, okay, like, how do you get to be, you know, one of the, how do you get to be a better technical trail runner besides just like going out and absolutely like going down every 10 years? I mean, I'm like out here on these technical trails and I'm like, how do people get better beyond just going out on technical trails and like tripping and falling every mile? And like,
Yeah, I mean, like in Tucson, because you kind of split time between Tucson and Bend, and I don't actually know those areas very well, but like, can you go and get that type of terrain in those areas for these races?
You can definitely find it. And that's been this summer when I got back from UTMB. I'm like, okay, like you have to make the effort to go to these trails versus just a big, big part of triathlon training was like, you have three sports to train for. So your days are packed. So there's not really time to like drive an hour to a trailhead because you have to ride your bike for 6 hours. Then you have to do a runoff and then maybe get to the pool. So your days are, I mean, long already. So a lot of your life is about, I guess, really like maximizing your downtime in between the sessions. You're not getting in your car. You want to base yourself in the most prime area you can, near a pool, near great training grounds, great riding roads. Now with the trail running, like making the effort to, okay, get in my car and drive up to Mount Bachelor if I'm in Bend, or driving over to Mount Lemmon in Tucson, because there are those trails or different things that I need to work on in these areas. It's just, I think, letting go of the like, okay, I'm going to run from my door. I literally used to have my day planned out in triathlon down to like the minute. Like if I leave the pool by 8:05, I'm home by 8:15. I can eat. I'll be on my bike by 9, ride 9 to 3, 1 hour runoff, 3 to 4. Like it was so strict. And now it's like, okay, you need to put the effort in to learn these other things with the trail running specifically. So there are, to your question, there are those opportunities. It's just, yeah, being proactive and targeting those. And I've been doing that the last, few months for sure.
I remember watching your race at Javelina last year in person, and then the Black Canyon race on the live stream. And just as an observation, like what came to mind for me, and I think my colleague Brett as well, is like, okay, you definitely have the athleticism. You definitely have the right mentality and the logistics to belong at the very top of the sport. You've had some results to back it up. Again, like thinking a year on from last year's Javelina, do you share that same level of confidence in yourself that like at any given start line, you can be there for the win, you can be there for a podium? Like it's your golden ticket, for example, to lose.
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, I think I certainly have that. I mean, I'm a competitive athlete. I've been a professional athlete for so long. Like when I go to a start line, like I want to win. My goal is to be at the front if I can. But to your question of like, do I think that when I'm at the starting lines? I mean, I think I got lucky almost at Javelina of how it went smoothly for the first, whatever it was, 80 miles. But I think I'm coming off of that as my first trail race. It was kind of this not accurate portrayal of how like the sport is, any race you do can be so different. So every single one can be so completely different. And I think I learned that very quickly, then going to Black Canyons and seeing how much more technical that was. And so I'm standing at a start line, certainly wanting to do my best and try to be at the front. Am I expecting that or no, not at all. I mean, yeah, it's, I think it's been very like eye-opening of like, and I love that because there's so much for me to learn and work on. And that's why I kind of moved into these new things. I've done triathlon for so long and it was almost like I was just on repeat. And now there's just so much out there to really, yeah, that I think I can work on and hopefully improve and progress with. And that's what's exciting to me is that there is that like potential and it gives me something to really focus on and go after versus, yeah, just kind of like, okay, like let's go out and nail this. What it's going to come down to is say the nutrition or dealing with the heat. No, I have like so many other skills to work on, which yeah, again, it's just exciting. It gives me like, okay, I'm plotting out all these routes in Bend. Like if I can go run at Smith Rock or these spots that, after UTMB, someone had mentioned that Zach Miller like prepped in Bend all in the spring, which I didn't know much about Zach. I've never met him or anything. I watched his unbelievable UTMB and I like went back on his Strava and I'm like, oh my God, he was training a lot at Smith Rock. I've got to go there. Like he was at Black Butte, which is this other area. I'm like, I need to go run those versus just like the path I usually run. So for me, it's just exciting with so much that I could potentially work on.
It is cool to your point about Zach and training in Bend, especially just how much you share in common with that location, how much more a place comes alive with possibility when you see like the blueprint being done for it there, and he put together one of the best UTMB performances of all time. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But it's so fun to watch you race. And like, I think back to last year again, like you held a pretty big lead through the first three laps of the race. I think everything seemed pretty good from what I remember from like to like mile 70 or 75. I recall you saying post-race that like nutrition was fine. For you, it was just like the quads, right? Like just maybe not enough time spent on trails. And I don't really think of Javelina as like a technical race. There's like some points, but for you in this buildup, has it just been a function of like getting on trails more? And maybe that's the last piece of the puzzle you have to solve for this race?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it seemed like to your, yeah, exactly what you just said. It was nutrition seemed fine. Heat, I was coming off Kona, so the heat really didn't seem too bad. It was exactly that. My quads by that third lap, it was just, yeah, my quads were so smashed. Like, and that's not even really, I guess, the most hilly course. It's a slight up and then a slight down, but it's very minimal, I guess, comparative to other trail races out there. But I still, every downward slanted step on that back half of the course was just painful. And so, yeah, this lead up, it's just been, that has been very front of mind. And most of my trail runs have just been, well, most of my training runs, it's back on trail, but it's, I basically run up a hill or up a mountain and then turn around and run as hard down as I can, really just trying to smash the quads. And whether or not that's an appropriate training approach of just like smash the quads as much as I can and hope that on race day, they're used to that. That's been partly the approach, but yeah, I've basically just been going, I'll run like 10 miles uphill and run hard 10 miles down, turn around, do it again over and over. And it's been about that and just kind of a long, like lengthening out my long runs of just, and that's the other, I guess, tough balance I've been trying to figure out where I'm like, okay, in a marathon build, you don't really usually run over the marathon distance. I mean, your long runs are anywhere from that 18 to 22 range normally. I think I would throw in a couple 24 mile days sometimes in my Kona prep, but for 100 miles, like how long are you supposed to run for? And it's like, you're not running 100 miles in practice, for, I mean, maybe some people do, I have no idea, but I'm just like, okay. I mean, I did 50 miles like 3 weeks ago and I was like, all right, wow. Let's see, this is going to go one of two ways. It's either when I get there on race day, I'll be fine because I just did this, or I'm like currently making myself more tired than needed. So we'll see. But I mean, I've just been lengthening it out and hoping that, yeah, endurance side of it and also just time on feet and the smashing of the quads will pay off.
No, it's super cool. And you know, the 50 mile run reminds me, so I listened to your episode with AJW, which was great. We'll link to it in the show notes. Great conversation. But one thing you said there that caught my attention was with some of the gravel races that are like 14 to 16 hours in length that you've done in the past, sometimes you'll do like a 3 to 4 hour run the day after or a few days after to simulate that like late stage 100 mile feeling that you couldn't necessarily get on a single runner that you wouldn't want to do in training because it'd be too taxing, obviously, to run 100 miles in training. Do you suspect that stuff will pay off over time, and that's like an experiment that might, I don't know, pay dividends?
That's, I mean, I'm holding on to it because I hope it does. In terms of like this past year, I'm coming off of triathlon where that is what you teach your body to do. You're running a marathon off of super tired legs, and you never never have the same fatigue in the legs as TTing 112 miles in training straight into a marathon. And so the idea is that you load that fatigue up with your long rides on Saturday, a shorter runoff, maybe an hour. And then Sunday you get up and on heavy legs, you do that hard 20 miler. And so for this ultra trail and the gravel mix I've been trying to balance this year has just been the same line of thinking in terms of, running on heavy, tired legs, where if a trail race is going to be 15, 16, 17 hours, I just rode 12 hours at Unbound and now I'll go run for 3 hours. That's hours 12 to 15. I think the biggest thing I've noticed this year and learned is that 12 hours riding my bike is certainly not the same as 12 hours running. I think it's the scaling doesn't seem to correlate as much as like in the triathlon at the shorter distances. Like you're running 12 hours is way more taxing, way more hard on the legs muscularly. And so I was sticking to that. Okay, I'll still do the like really long rides and just still keep my long runs quality at that 2 to 3 hour range. And I just think that doesn't give me enough, I think, muscular load necessarily that really parallels some of these longer trail runs, 15, 16, 17 hour days. And so that's kind of why I've been, at least in this Javelina block, introduced some longer days pounding on the legs. I think it does play a role to your question, the long rides into the runs. Those runs are hard. Like you feel so horrible the next day. Like you're just so tired. And it's not necessarily the muscular fatigue in the legs. I think it's mentally training and really good mental work because you feel horrible and you have to like just keep moving forward. And so that's, you do come up against that mentally in the trail runs. And I think that that is good training for that more so than I think the actual load on the legs.
Fascinating. And I've heard it's not quite the biking into running example, but I have heard some of the, like the European runners, I think Jim has mentioned it before, that they'll do like a big Schemo race. And then the next day hop on the roads, or if there are like lower elevation trails available, hop on the trails and do a similar simulation. I find that fascinating.
That's super cool. I know I've never done any of that. I skate ski in the winter, but not the Schemo, but I'm certainly intrigued now that I feel like it's like a whole new world for me. It looks pretty cool.
Right on. You know, talking about Bentonville for a second, you're there for a gravel race. And, you know, last year before Javelina, you did Kona before. And, you know, obviously there's more involved there. There's the swim component, the running component, and the bike. In Bentonville this weekend, it's just a gravel race. I shouldn't say just, but it's just the bike component. Do you find that like heading into this year's Javelina, even with that gravel race minus Kona, you'll be like a little bit more fresh for this year's race?
I think so. We were talking earlier about the Big Sugar gravel race. I don't think it is a 100-mile gravel race. I think it was last year right around that 6-hour mark. I don't think it'll be as taxing as some of the earlier gravel races this year where it was just all out. This is kind of the season ender. A lot of people already kind of know where they stand in the Lifetime Grand Prix series. So I don't think we'll see. I shouldn't speak so soon, but it's more kind of just, yeah, like end of the gravel season. I think it shouldn't be, knock on wood, too taxing 1 week out, also coming off of years of doing this. So I think 1 week out, I should be okay. To your question of fresher heading into Javelina, I certainly have structured my training leading in this year much, much differently than last year coming off. I literally was coming off of Kona. So Kona, you taper for about, you kind of taper 2 weeks out. So I did my final long run 2 weeks out of Kona, which was 2 weeks out of Javelina. So that's 1 month out. I think my final run was about 20 miles. And then the volume comes way, way down. A lot of just sharpening. I did race Kona, which was a marathon, over 3 weeks out from Javelina. But then if you look at what I did last year, I'm just like, I look back on my training calendar and I was like, holy crap, you didn't even run. I didn't run for like 10 days. And then the week leading into Big Sugar, I did like a couple of jogs. And then the day after Big Sugar, I did a 75-minute trail run that was like 9 miles and then Javelina. And so I think having 3 weeks of maybe 20-mile load was partly why I could not walk after Javelina for about 3 weeks. So I'm hoping I think the legs are much more seasoned, much more ready to really cover the full distance, hopefully.
Just a couple more questions. Here for the golden ticket, right? Like obviously Javelina is a great race, but here to punch a ticket back to Western States?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously I had a tough day at Western States this year. Certainly not how I envisioned it going. I had to drop about halfway through, and literally from the second my wristband was cut off, literally with a sword, I was just like, how can I get back there? So that's the ultimate goal of, targeting some of the golden ticket races. This one, there's three at Black Canyons if it doesn't go well. So certainly the eyes on that, and the ultimate goal is I want to make it to that track in Auburn. So yeah, that's the Javelina first stop. Try to get one of the two would be absolutely a dream.
I love it. Head now on the golden ticket tour. This is the first stop, maybe the only stop, hopefully the only stop.
Exactly.
Last question. I'm curious about the shoe choice for this race. You know, Hoka is interesting. Maybe the Rocket X2 isn't quite right for the windier parts of the course, but like, I think you could get away with a road shoe. Like the Mach could be good, but what are you thinking right now? Like what do you trail road? Like, what are you going to do?
I know. Totally. I think I'm going to go to your, exactly to your point. I feel like, especially given, given my history with the ankle rolls now, that is new for me, but now it's very like, very front of mind always. So I'm like, I think I've moved more towards the conservative Heather versus the like, yeah, fuck it, I'm going Rocket X to every race. I think I'm thinking right now Mach X. I really like it. It's got some really good cush, but it also is light and gives you some propulsion similar to the Rocket X too. But I don't know. I was thinking maybe even lighter for what the first lap or two, but yeah, I'm thinking Mach X right now.
It's right on.
My go-to. I'm going to have three or four with me, but yeah, I just remember the last lap. I honestly might have Clifton's with me just for that extra cush for that final lap. I just remember every step of the final lap. You're just like, you're still trying to run, but it's not fast. So whether or not you have like the lightest shoe out there or not, I don't think is as important anymore. It's not as my like, oh, I need this race flat. It's more like, no, you want your body to have a little bit of give, you know, the final 20 miles and just get to that finish line. So that might be my go-to for the last lap.
Cool. Well, Heather, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much. And we're really excited to watch your race unfold. We'll make sure to link to all your social media, the YouTube channel in the show notes. But yeah, just best of luck this coming weekend, or sorry, at the end of the month. And it's going to be fun.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Finn. I appreciate it.
Thank you to Oladance for sponsoring this show. Oladance makes wireless Bluetooth headphones that deliver 19 hours of battery life, superior sound, the ability to still safely hear your surroundings, and an open ear design so you can wear them for long periods of time without developing ear pain. If you're interested, head over to oladance.com/ST and use code ST in all capital letters at checkout for $30 off their OWS2 headphones. Also, thanks to Brooks for sponsoring this show. As you probably know by now, I first started using their products, especially the Cascadia 8, way back in 2014 during a thru hike of the Appalachian Trail. Fast forward to 2023, and they've got a new and improved Cascadia 17 and a High Point clothing collection that merges great performance and style. So head over to brooksrunning.com/singletrack to check it all out. All right, this is unique. We have a round table type Javelina 100 pre-race athlete interview. I think the first I've ever done. We've got Joe McConaughey, who's a veteran of the show, Ryan Raff, and Blake Slattengren, all sort of united by, I guess, Joe's coaching tutelage, which is kind of cool. Blake, I want to start with you. It looks like you've had a lot of success on sort of, I'll call it the regional ultra scene out there in the Pacific Northwest. Really good results at Gorge, for example, among others. Talk about the why now for lining up for a more nationally competitive race like Javelina.
Yeah, totally. I just think it's time because I've done like all the regional races, at least a lot of them that I've wanted to do. And I want to see what I can do in that more competitive field, see what's going to happen.
Why Javelina over Black Canyon, Canyons, some of these other golden ticket type high profile races?
Yeah, totally. Well, I was looking for a bigger one to do this fall. So just kind of fit in with the schedule well. And I know a number of people have done Javelina and said it's super fun, total party. So I said, yeah, let's do it.
Joe, we've talked a lot in the past. You've been somewhat quiet, at least by ultra signup standards, over the last 18-ish months, especially since your Cocodona win back in 2022. What has that time span looked like for you running-wise? And I guess, why is the renewed focus now in Javelina?
It's a lot of time spent on the beach with my pup, going on nice walks, cooking fine dinner. No, I've had a bothersome Achilles injury that kind of started in 2021. And then I was gearing up and went for Bandera in beginning of this year, 2023. And then I dropped at mile 40 at Bandera. And then I legitimately looked at my Achilles and was like, okay, told I had something called Haglund's deformity, okay, which basically is like a structural Achilles thing that's not too big of a deal, what can be a big deal. So I freaked out a little bit, which was understandably so, because it's the same thing a lot of Maggie Goodrell, Galen Rupp, a bunch of people have had Haglund's. And so Noah Drotty, and I talked with a few of them, and I know a few friends who've also had it, and there's a lot of alarm bells around it. Luckily, I'm at a very early stage of Haglund's, where I have the same structure that I did 10 years ago, and I've been running on it for 10 years. Anyway, this is a lot longer answer to your question than you wanted, Finn.
No, I'll keep going.
Basically, I've had a semi year of setbacks in some ways, and then post Cocodona, I went after the JMT FKT, so that kind of occupied my whole fall. And then my buddy Jeff broke it by 10 minutes or something, 2 weeks later. So I was like, sweet. And then Bandera was fun, but didn't go so well. And then I did a fun run at Barkley, which was basically off of mostly a stair stepper and a few weeks of running. And then that set me back slightly from an Achilles standpoint. And then I've kind of been building to get to where I am today, to be at Javelina.
You know, and again, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I've always characterized you as one of the more bulletproof runners in the sport. Like, you're one of the rare individuals that actually attempted and had success at these long trail FKTs while also maintaining an ultra racing background young. It wasn't just a swan song thing for you. You went for it early and sort of lived to tell the tale and still be relevant in the sport. Does this feel like something that's just sort of out of the blue, or is it that type of workload catching up with you? How are you thinking about that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I like to think of it as I was joking with Blake about this. We were on a run and I was like, Blake, I might only have a few more good years left in me. Gotta race now while I can. And he's like, dude, shut the hell up. And I'm like, yeah, it's fair. I think I'll probably still be racing for another 10 years at a pretty high level, maybe 5 years at a pretty high level. So I still feel I feel like I really got the Achilles under control. It's one of those things that doesn't really go away quickly. My doctor's it's going to be super, no matter what happens, it's going to be a slow burn to slowly get worse, or a slow burn to slowly get better. The best indicator for me is it's basically been I've done 6 90 mile weeks essentially. And that's gotten progressively better through all that training, which is a good indicator. So I'm kind of feeling things out, and do generally feel bulletproof. Although once I turned 30, I unfortunately notched, one or two little niggles here and there.
Ryan, to introduce you, I pulled a quote from your Instagram because you just posted this a couple days back, and I found it very relevant to our conversation today. I think it's a Ralph Waldo Emerson quote or a Walt Whitman quote, but you say, "Do not be too timid and squeamish about your actions. All of life is an experiment. The more experiments you make, the better. What if they are a little coarse and you may not get your coat soiled or torn? What if you do fail and get fairly rolled in the dirt once or twice? Up again, you shall never be so afraid of a tumble," end quote. And I love that quote. And I think it's all part of this question I want to ask you, which is you've taken some big swings, or you've lined up at some pretty prominent national class races right off the bat in your career. It seems like there's been incremental progress, especially this year. What's it been like? Because for those that don't know, you're an NAU alum, and you sort of made the jump straight to trail. Talk about what that's been like, and sort of the biggest lessons in the arena so far.
Yeah, it's been fun, but also kind of rough. I coming out of college, going to ultra, it's probably easy to think I'm just going to dominate this world because I come from NAU, but it's definitely been a steeper learning curve than I might have anticipated. And I've definitely been humbled at a lot of different instances, Black Canyon, Speed Goat 2 years ago. And just, there's just so much more that goes into ultra running than college running, as far as nutrition and gear and training even. And so that's been, yeah, like a lot of things I know I still have to learn and I'm still learning. That's why part of the reason I got Joe as a coach is just like so I could have some more wisdom from somebody more experienced than I was. And yeah, for me, like I really just want to go to the competitive races because even if I might not always be where I want to be, like I want to keep taking those swings and get into Western States is like the main goal right now. But there's like further things on the line down the line that I want to do. And so I just don't want to shy away from the competition. And while it's been, yeah, rough at times, I think that there's still been some successes and I hope that Javelin will be on one of those successes.
I love that mindset of, you know, not being afraid of any given start line and sort of like putting your feet to the fire, getting in the mix. One thing, I don't know the story here, but why did you choose trail out of college instead of like, you know, pursuing like Hoka Naz Elite or Hanson's and maybe doing some unfinished business on the roads?
Yeah. I actually did want to go to the roads at first. Like, well, I was pretty split. I didn't know what I wanted to do between trails and roads. And I thought about Naz Elite a lot. And that was kind of like a goal of mine in college is to go with them. But just being in Flagstaff and running on the trails, like I kind of just fell more in love with the trails. And that scene, I think just, it just seems a lot more fun to me than, you know, a road marathon. But yeah, another thing too was like I was a freshman in college and like Rob Carr came in and talked to our class one time because Buck Blankenship was my instructor. And so he came in, like showed some videos of him doing like rim to rim. And I was just like kind of hooked off of that too. So
right on.
Yeah, that's kind of just, I just think trail's a lot more fun.
Cool. Well, you've sort of answered this question already, but I think I'll throw it to Blake and to Joe. And I mean, you guys are all united in a sense that you all have, from what I understand, collegiate running backgrounds. And we're in this interesting era where a lot of young runners like you, Ryan, instead of immediately thinking the roads, they're actually giving like ultra and trail some consideration. Just on the time, like starting with you, Blake, in the time you've been on the ultra scene, what have been the most interesting or important realizations so far about what it takes to be successful? And like off of that, what's the best advice you can give for someone that's like just starting entering the sport?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing I've learned is just consistency for sure. Just putting in the work day in, day out, and just getting out there and racing. So I think that's kind of the biggest thing for me going from more the track to the trail side is just putting the time in. And sorry, what was the second part of the question?
If you could go back in time to like your, you know, 2020 or 2021 self getting into the sport, what would you tell them?
Just do it. I don't know. It's been a lot of fun. I think the community is super fun. I think that's been the biggest part for me getting into the sport is just the awesome community that surrounds it. So I think just kind of going full force into that has been a lot of good fun.
How about you, Joe?
Yeah, I would say the same thing. It's like I've met a lot of being in Seattle, being a coach. I like know people on the Brooks Beast. I was just with like Josh Kerr, Brandon Kidder, who's a former like NCAA champ, and like talking to them, Brandon Miller, who's like, I forget what he's like a low mid 140 guy in the eight, and they're all so scared of trail, and it's really comical to me. Part of, you know, we started this thing called the All In Trail Collective, and my initial like kind of impetus for that was like there's so much potential in trail, and it's this kind of opportunity to like to have a really rich place, and I hope that community is like a really positive, impactful, empowering community, and helping athletes who are 20, 22, 25, making that jump from trail is a huge step. And it requires a little bit of crazy, or like that crazy friend, that like crazy college friend who's like encouraging people to do keg stands, which is not what trails is. That's a horrible analogy, but yeah, we're just here to do keg stands. You heard it from me here first. You can cut that like you want, Finn. You can insert that. But it's like,
That's the clip for the episode.
Exactly. You need that to me, like you need that push. And when I was getting into trail running, you know, I ran the Pacific Crest Trail when I was 22 and then was like, sweet, like I was a D1 miler and I ran the PCT. I don't ever have to run again. And I didn't run for like 5 months. And then I was living in Austria at the time. I got dusted in this like 10K mountain race by all these like who knows Austrian people after not really running for 5 months. And I was like, wow, I guess I just can't waltz my way into running and like expect to be a world-class runner. And then I got into ultras and I realized, holy crap, like a 50K is way harder in some ways than trying to average 50 miles a day running, and recognizing that it's a totally different discipline and that I need to be a student of that discipline. So to me, that's what's super exciting. But I think it's, there's just so many, like there's so much inertia built into track, even to get people to run roads, to then think of somebody getting out of that inertia to run trails at a high level. Like, you know, there's a lot of different reasons why people don't want to do that. But to me, like, it's super fun seeing Ryan and Blake develop, because it's like, yeah, Ryan, like you may not be like the, you know, beating Jim Walmsley right now, but going through a handful of like 100K, 100 mile experiences in your young 20s is going to set you up to do that. And similarly for Blake, like he's developed into like a really killer, like 50K, 50 mile runner and knows how to grind. It's like, yeah, you keep knocking at that door and you're going to just get better at the 50K distance. But like that might not be, you might not get to where you really want to be for another year or 2 years or even, you know, 3 or 4 years, but you can keep progressing in that sphere, which I think, yeah, once you hit track, you know, you might hit your mile PR at the age of 19 and like be chasing that for the next 10 years.
Ryan, is there anything else you would add to that?
No, I'm just glad that like I have people like Joe and Blake to like help me navigate this new and like exciting sphere, because like coming out of college, I just feel like there wasn't a whole lot of resources out there for like people switching from like track and cross country to ultra running. And that's when I found Joe and I was like, oh, I guess there is now. And also with like Andy Wacker starting the trail team, like that has been really cool, like to see runners like Christian Allen and I'm gonna butcher this name, but Mika, I won't Mika even Bone. Pronounce his last name. Yeah, anyways, like it's been cool to see them like dominate kind of on the short trail scene. But I think it's becoming like a cool or a more popular thing to do, is just like, you don't have to go straight to the roads when you're like, when you feel like your prime in track and cross country is over. Like you can, like there's this other option that's way cool, that's called trail, that like is attracting a lot of competition now and a lot of cool guys, cool personalities in the sport. So it's exciting.
Blake, coming back to you, we have this phrase that we use in the podcast quite a bit. It's called the random baller. And it's this idea that, you know, there's a really talented runner in the race that doesn't quite have widespread name recognition yet. And because of that, they sort of on race day surprise the field, have this great result. And people are wondering like how they overlooked them. I feel like you could be one of those runners in this year's race. For those that don't know you, like what's your, in addition to like what you've done in the Pacific Northwest scene, like what is your running pedigree and like how confident are you feeling heading into this year's race based on your training?
Yeah, totally. So yeah, I came from cross country and track background, doing that in high school and college down at Lewis and Clark in Portland. After college, I did some road halves for a while before kind of falling into the trail scene and falling in love with that. So yeah, I've been doing that for a little bit. I've had some solid results at races like Chuckanut and Gorge now. So been having a lot of fun with that, and yeah, just trying to embody that random baller mindset for sure.
Blake also dropped me really hard on a long run 2 weeks ago, which I'm still reeling from, but
that's good intel for the fantasy free trail folks out there making picks.
Yeah, I will say I Joe's training's been great. I've been feeling pretty fit going into this race, so I'm pretty stoked for it, but we'll see. It's a lot of unknowns too.
Yeah. Off of that, what's been the biggest thing you've been working on in training to be ready for this race? Like what's been the crux for you, if there is one?
Totally. It's been a little more, I guess, speed stuff than I was expecting. So a lot of just working on that threshold, bringing that down. We had one awesome long run with Joe last week and a half ago, where we were just did like a 26 mile long run with some solid, steady climbs. We were doing a lot of that threshold pace, and that was super fun run, feeling good after that one.
Cool. Joe, you are the, well, you're many things, but you're the king of close calls when it comes to like near golden ticket performances.
But on the wrong side, yeah.
What is leading you to believe that this could be the year you get over the hump and you punch that ticket to Western States?
I'm just going to drop Blake and Ryan. So that's step one. No. No, I'm stoked. I'm just like, I mean, there's so many things you look into going to a race like this. I like look back at my, this is when like your old training can give you, I look at my 2021 training for Javelina and I was like, wow, that was kind of trash training. Like I was like, I did the Arizona Trail and all my workouts were very average. And I guided for like, 3 weeks, like 5 weeks before. And I tried to run while also guiding. So I'm kind of like, at the very least I'll do better than 2021, which was a decent time, which should get me like a top five time. And then also, I think it's the same thing that Ryan's quote like captured earlier is like, I never like get to a start line and look at somebody and be like, wow, that person is like out of my class or league. And I feel that way about, you know, the start line right now where I'm like, yeah, you have a lot of really fast runners. You know, you could, somebody was like, who's racing? And I was like, well, this one guy, Zach, this guy knows nothing. It was actually Brandon Miller, he runs like a 147. And I was like, Zach Miller is like the US 100 mile champ. Matt Daniels got like fourth at Western States. Ryan Montgomery got seventh or maybe eighth. And he also ran like, he's run fast times at Javelina. Brett Hornig casually ran 13:45. Like you go through and I was like, oh, there's like a lot of good runners actually when you think about it. But at the same time, I don't look at that list and think it's out of my league and like I can't compete with folks. And it'll be interesting depending on what the conditions hold. If it, like right now, I think it's supposed to be kind of a cooler day, which will be interesting from like a strategy perspective. I feel like capable of being able to hold a good, long, steady pace. And then hopefully I'll be able to play my cards when I need to.
I love that in this group, there's a sense of fearlessness and belonging on any start line. I think that's like a great initial recipe for a good day. Ryan, again, I think one of the themes has just been like learning, right? Like you're just like progressively just like getting better in the sport. What's making you feel confident for Javelina, just having had such great experience the last 2 years?
I think just, I don't know, like it's been sometimes hard to feel confident going into my first 100. But I think just knowing that I've done training that I can be happy with, like that's been consistent and not like I haven't been overtraining, I think is just a big thing. It's like, I know I've trained enough, but I haven't trained over what I should, you know?
Yeah.
And I think just the amount of work I put in at like race pace, I think is just a good indicator to me that like, if I can just hold that pace until failure, like it's going to be a good day. Like if I can just have the discipline to not go out hard, to like cool well when it gets hot, that I can just, just put together a solid performance. But for me, there's still a lot of unknown, you know, like the last race I did that was this long, or I've never done a race this long, but my second longest race was 100K and I like blew up it before mile 50. So like there is a lot of unknown for me, like past mile 60. Like I know I can get to like 60 or 70. Okay. But
yeah.
After that, it's like a lot of unknown. So that's definitely a little intimidating, but I still have confidence that, yeah, if I am smart on race day, that things can go well. So yeah, I mean, short answer is I'm not super confident, but I'm trying to get there just looking back at what I have done and the experiences I have gained and use those to fuel me on race day.
If you race yourself into a golden ticket, are you taking it to Western next year?
Oh, for sure. Like without a doubt. So
how about you, Blake?
That's the main goal.
Yeah, for sure.
Joe?
I mean, I'm 0-6, so I like, I'd feel bad if Blake or Ryan were behind me, but I probably would take it. Yeah.
Right on. Well, guys, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat with all of you. I think you guys all individually add great excitement to this race. And again, I just love like the demeanors heading in, like the quiet confidence. last thing, we'll make sure to link to all of your social media in the show notes, is just like final thoughts or calls to actions for the listeners. Like, Blake, anything else we didn't discuss here? I know this was a brief interview, but like anything you want to say before we close up, starting with you.
Yeah, I'm just excited to toe the line, see what happens. I think it's a fun place to be where I'm at right now, where I'm not sure what's going to happen, but no matter what happens, it'll be fun. And I think I'll learn a lot. So
how about you, Blake? Oh, sorry, Ryan.
No, I don't have a whole lot to add. Like Blake said, I'm just getting really excited. I don't think I've ever been this nervous for an ultra before. And I think it's just like wrapping my mind around 100 miles. So yeah, I mean, I just can't wait for race day and just to get started. And it's going to be a lot of fun out there, especially like having people out there that I know. And like, yeah, just how deep the field is. It's going to be a really fun race. Just, yeah, it's going to be crazy.
And how about you, Joe? Last word.
Yep, we're all giving you lame answers, Finn, but I'm just ready to rock, man. It's not much more I want to do. Ready to race.
Well,
are you supposed to talk smack or something?
Yeah, that's, I know. Finn's trying to pit us against each other, but like, we're like, you know, stand strong. Bean sprout strong.
The one thing I'll finish with is here at Single Track, we do try to pride ourselves on sort of being the athlete's pod. And I understand, Blake, that you are currently unsponsored and you're heading into a pretty high profile race. So for any athlete managers or people at trail brands that are listening to this show, watch out for Blake, because he could have a great day out there and already has great results, great person. So yeah, just throwing your name out there, Blake.
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, I have one actual thing that I must say.
Please.
That Blake didn't include earlier. Blake and I actually had the same high school coach.
Really?
Yeah. Coach Kelly. Legend.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Shout out Coach Kelly.
Yeah.
Well, awesome, guys. You're all awesome. Stoked to follow the race at the end of this month. And yeah, see you out there.
See you, Ben. Thank you.
Thanks.